There's a feeling my life's been shaken out of control. It's arising from the depths of meaning I never know. There's a feeling that shines in the front of my mind. I'm gonna speak it out at the fireside, and in the morning we'll all be snapping the whole way home.
All right, we're back with the show that everyone's been waiting for.
Yeah, we know you've been on the edge of your seats, and good for you.
Yeah. Like to build up the anticipation. Yeah, it's your lucky day.
Yeah. Whether your name is David or Aaron or Amanda or just the old NSA or old classic listener.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. I think we might have a few more listeners than the NSA at this point.
Yeah. How about that?
Yeah. Various nefarious government organizations.
Yeah. What are they going to say about Jurassic World?
Yeah. Yeah. This is actually maybe the first movie we've done where I actually had to think, like, wait, what's the title of this again?
I thought to myself, if I forget, at least I can ask you.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was called Jurassic Park Resurgence. Like, just a moment ago, I thought that, and then I had to remember, it's Rebirth, and it's Jurassic World,
right? Yeah, yeah, which I wonder about that decision. Why did they choose to keep the Jurassic World thing instead of, like, go back to Jurassic Park? I feel like...
Yeah.
People didn't like Jurassic World by the end.
Yeah. And like, they had the three Jurassic Parks and sort of the three Jurassic Worlds. And it seems like
Jurassic Galaxy.
Yeah. I was thinking Jurassic Life could have been an option.
Jurassic Life. Jurassic Kingdom.
Jurassic Kingdom. I think that would have been a good one.
Yeah. Although maybe it has to be one syllable.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Part of me suspects that either... This conversation happened in a back film studio that took like days and days worth of conversation, or they just quickly just wrote it off.
Just 5 seconds. Like, nope, it's Jurassic World. Move on.
Still World. We're just, yeah, that's it. Keep moving.
We're rebirthing it. So it's new again.
It's rebirthing. And yeah, what is being rebirthed? Because there's no indication in the movie that anything was really being rebirthed.
Yeah, no, we're talking about it. I don't understand why rebirth is like essentially what this movie is called. It's the only like distinguishing word of the title.
Yeah. I kept wondering if like the other ones, you know, like the other films that we've had and whatnot, there's always a sense of like a degree to which the movie almost mirrors like what is happening in society with people's relationship to Jurassic Park. Like, you know, do they like it anymore? Is this a rebirth? So I don't know. Part of me almost thought like, is this the studio's way of saying like, the franchise is back, baby. Like, we're back.
Yeah, I think pretty much. But arguably they're not, because it's really bad.
Yeah, nothing was rebirth.
Yeah.
I have.
Roger Ebert, what a bad movie.
What a bad movie. Speak slower, Gene. Or faster, Gene. Yeah, so anyway, listener, so you know, Sean and I are in the same room, which is really great.
Yeah.
Which I actually kind of, I don't know why I did that. I hate fist bumps, kind of.
But it's funny to do it on a podcast that no one can see. They just get the audio of us saying fist bump and don't even hear it.
Exactly. Yeah, we're not one of these cool podcasts that are all filmed the exact same way.
Yeah, like a video in some cool studio that you're renting space in.
Wow, fake brick.
Yeah, they have those like microphone holders that have like 7 angles.
Exactly. So this was a great one because we got to see it. We got to watch the movie together. Now, of course, usually when we're watching a movie together, it's in the theaters. This one we watched in my basement, which is where we are now. And I don't know, maybe listener, you might occasionally hear my kids screaming for me.
Do you want to pause?
I think it's fine if it's cool with you.
Okay, as long as...
I think that they'll maybe run around a little bit and then they'll run
away. In and out.
Probably go to the top of the stairs and scream for us. And then
if Lucy goes down and get her perspective on dinosaurs,
I have
a few things to say.
Yeah, that's a good point. Because, you know, listener, my son loves dinosaurs, as many kids do, which I think is one reason why, Sean, I think you've talked about like the original Jurassic Park really appealing to you because dinosaurs are cool. And that movie was really cool.
Yeah, yeah. It's an interesting experience watching this movie, Jurassic World Rebirth, with just all of the knowledge of the first movie in mind, to just have this compare and contrast of like, how is it so bad now? Like, it's still dinosaurs and stuff, and they're,
yeah,
like, they're literally just playing the same music, like John Williams' 1993 score.
You're right.
Was like still the score.
Like, this movie, and I think at some point we'll have to explain something of what the plot is, but this movie had one scene that really tried to like make you feel emotional. And because they played that classic John Williams song when Alan and Ellie first see the Brontosaurus or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just
he turns her head,
and it's just this, it, you know, I think people still talk about this being one of the most like emotionally charged scene in cinema history. And so they played that song in a scene when they just showed like 60 brachiosauruses. And then they cut really quickly, and it was like, I really felt nothing.
Yeah, it was a strange scene. It was at least halfway through, and they'd already shown a lot of dinosaurs. It wasn't like a big reveal.
It was like a non sequitur.
Yeah, it was just like bad stuff has happened for a long time, and all of a sudden it's like, and they looked exactly like the brachio or brontosaurus or whatever they are, except they had these weird, really thin and really long tails that were like moving in slow-mo through the air. Yeah. And like, I guess it was supposed to be beautiful, but it was just weird. It was like, why did they have these tails?
Yeah.
And it was something to, I guess, distinguish them and make them like different than the originals.
Yeah.
But not only that, and then they kind of cue the music as like all these characters that, like, how could you possibly care about these characters? Like, it's just, there is nothing there.
Yeah.
But they're essentially, they're trying to collect, like, blood samples from these rogue dinosaurs. Three, like, genetically altered dinosaurs to create, like, a pharmaceutical drug for heart conditions. And so as the music cues up, this, like, da-da-da, Scarlett Johansson lines up with a gun and shoots one of them in the neck with this like dart that starts taking its blood out and then like shoots off this like parachute of like a blood sample. So like, it's kind of a weird contrast where they're playing this like beautiful music as they're like extracting something from these
dinosaurs
and probably inflicting a significant amount of pain.
Right.
And it's like, is that something we're celebrating here too?
Yeah, this, you know, Sean, I'm glad that you mentioned, like, these characters who you feel absolutely nothing toward, because I was just gonna, as you said that, I was thinking, I don't remember the names of any of the characters.
I was just thinking that.
The only character I remember the name of is someone who's not even in the film, and it's a guy named Booker, because in this film's quest to create characters we can sympathize with despite like any real effort to like make them real characters, the only tool they could really use is just creating backstory in the hopes that the audience member will care. So there's a scene with Scarlett Johansson and one of her former like compatriots in the special forces whose name I don't know.
Mahershala Ali.
Okay, that's right.
Green At some Book. Point, you just called him Green Book.
And so he just goes to her, I heard what happened to Booker.
That's right.
To which she, you know, she explained it was just a car bomb in Yemen. in this attempt to create some kind of backstory that we, again, it's like throwing spaghetti at a wall and hoping something will stick. Like, hopefully something that these characters will say will make you want them, like them. And then she retorted with something like, did you ever work things out with Margie or something? He's like, no, because we see each other, we just think of our kid.
Yeah, we just think of, like, the boy. That part exchange was amazing because it was, like, four back and forth dialogues and each one, like, added a new little blip like to backstory, but it's just words.
It's such a trope. And but this was all after they did something that Sean and I absolutely love and we had actually been talking about a lot throughout yesterday, which is an attempt for the audience member to instantly know something about a character, just referring to them as being the best.
Yeah, we talked about that probably 3 hours before watching this movie.
Yeah.
Just how that was a trope in, like, Predator.
Mm-hmm.
It's just Dutch is the best.
It's the best.
They never say at what, but at whatever is needed, they're just known across the land as the best.
Yes.
It's like, and, Scarlett Johansson said that about Green Book.
About Green Book,
she's like, well, he's the best.
He's the best.
It's like, as the character's being introduced, we have no idea what he does. And honestly, by the end of the movie, I still don't.
I just don't know what he's
the best at.
He had a boat. That's all.
He had a boat.
Which he also didn't really actually seem to be very good at driving. Because at one point, their only way to get rid of a dinosaur was just to wreck the boat on the beach.
That's right.
And,
yeah.
And because they were like, hey, Mosasaurus can't swim in shallow waters. So
yeah. I said it like 4 times in like a 5 minute period. So that, like, all right, jump in the water. It's the shallows.
That kind of reminds me of that scene we just referenced. Kind of started with the death of one of the characters. Who's sort of on the squad. Man, this movie had, like, absolutely unempathetic deaths. Like, they didn't even make an attempt to, and I don't really think there were that many, maybe, like, 2 or so. But they really made no attempt to, like, I didn't feel like anything was scary, really, in this movie.
No.
You know?
Absolutely not.
That was crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there was this whole long sequence where, like, a T-Rex was, like, flipping over this raft. And I admittedly was falling in and out of sleep during this scene. And I would, like, wake myself up to my loud snore. But this T-Rex was, like, they were, like, no, Isabella, or whatever, like, the young girl. Yeah. You just got to get on the other side of these rocks, and then he won't be able to get us.
Right, right.
That wasn't, like, an entrance to, like, a temple or something, was it?
No,
2 big rocks
in the river.
The temple
came later. Yeah.
So there was a temple.
There was a temple because they entered some kind of temple and Scarlett Johansson said the line, "Is this some sort of ancient temple?" And it just like was.
My God.
Yeah, all of a sudden it was like an Indiana Jones kind of scene. But,
yeah.
Yeah, but there are no artifacts. They're just in some temple. They don't ever make reference to like indigenous peoples of the area or why there'd be a temple.
No, we just know that it was like 87 miles north of the equator because they kept telling us throughout the movie how many miles they were from the equator.
Yeah, everything was in reference to the equator. And at some point, someone said a line like, well, the equator, like everything's like it was 60 million years ago.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true.
I don't think it is because he specifically mentioned how the rest of the world, because, you know, if no one has seen this movie, I highly doubt, especially anyone listening to this podcast. But basically, for the most part, even though dinosaurs like escaped into human civilization, they're all going extinct except for the ones that live along the equator. Because as this guy says in one of the many moments of exposition throughout this movie, you know, too much solar radiation, humidity levels are different, oxygen levels, et cetera, et cetera. So this group has to go to the equator. But they just, every like 5 minutes, white text would show up on screen, like 400 miles north of the equator, 87 miles north of the equator. It's like, we don't need to know where they are. Yeah. There's no point in knowing that.
Yeah. Probably one of the only good things I can say about this movie is that the opening scene delivers in the way that you want a Jurassic World or Jurassic Park opening scene to deliver, which is basically just something going wrong and someone dying by a dinosaur.
Yes.
And that happens and it's pretty satisfying, I would say.
Does that opening scene ever come full circle?
It was actually after we finished last night, I was thinking about that, and I don't think so.
It didn't, did it?
I think the only way, so this is probably a 5 minute opening
D-Rex.
Scene.
The D-Rex.
Yeah, they just call it the D-Rex. And it's like in some lab, and it's probably the most egregious example of product placement I've ever seen, too.
Me
like,
too.
Literally 1 minute into the movie, some guy's eating a Snickers.
Yeah.
And like drops the wrapper and somehow that like
wrapper ex machina, like this, this wrapper just causes this one Snickers wrapper, like causes this whole problem. Cause it like blows under a door and then it like makes its way in and contaminates this room and then gets sucked up into a fan so that it somehow blocks the gate and this D-Rex gets out.
Right. It's like Chekhov's Snickers. Yeah. And like, There's a couple people in like the kind of ET attire, like the mm-hmm. scientific, like non-contamination suits mm-hmm. with like the face shields and stuff. And there was a guy, he wasn't the Snickers eating guy, I don't think, but there was a guy, and right when it showed him, I think you and I were like, that's the guy that's going to die.
You just kind of know.
Yeah, it's like, it's probably him, right? And then 2 minutes later, like, they have to, like, close this gate mm-hmm. or else, like, the D-Rex is going to get out. And you just see that guy, like, yeah. running up.
He's like, please let me out. Let me out.
And then this new dinosaur, it's like a T-Rex, except it has basically hands.
Yeah, it does have
like,
hands.
Grabs him and, like, turns him around. Upside down for some reason. Yeah. Just starts eating him. And that opening scene ends. And then it displays text on the screen.
Oh
it just
God.
Goes to a black screen, and it's just like one sentence at a time with no like graphics or anything. Uh-huh. And it doesn't do that thing where it's like, you know, a sentence appears and then a sentence below it. And it kind of like,
no.
please, it'll like fade to the next frame with another sentence of setting something up. So
yeah.
maybe something in that connects the opening scene to everything later, but it was the least explicit connection between
it was
the opening scene and everything to follow that I've ever seen.
The only thing I can think, unless they are truly planning on making this now a trilogy, and somehow that's going to play in. But other than that, in terms of this movie, did we see that dinosaur again?
I think so, but okay. you don't really get what it is at the beginning, so you have to kind of like assume,
yeah,
like that because there's like. It was very weird what they did with dinosaurs in this movie because it was uh-huh. always pretty unclear what was what. And they
yeah.
like talk about like, oh, this flying dinosaur, we need a sample of that. And like, it was like, there's a flying dinosaur that's, you know, like trying to eat someone. And then like 10 minutes later, there's a completely different flying dinosaur that's mm-hmm. like trying to eat someone. You're like, wait,
yeah.
these are two different kinds of flying dinosaurs. Like, which one's
yeah.
which? Which one are you talking about? And there were like at least three versions of a T-Rex, like, they just kind of kept like showing
yeah.
up.
Spinosaurus was around for a while swimming in the water, and then just I think it just kind of like left.
Yeah, yeah. It ate someone first.
Oh, it did. Okay.
Yeah, but yeah. There was a weird way of introducing characters on this boat. Like they introduced like Scarlett Johansson and Green Book, Mahershala
mm-hmm.
Ali. I actually do remember their names because while
oh.
you were asleep, there were scenes for both of them where someone was screaming their name
really?
Again and again for about a minute. And so Green Book's name
wow.
was Duncan.
Duncan.
And Scarlett Johansson's just like, Duncan! Duncan!
You know what? I do remember at one point you laughing. And I woke up and I just heard the word Duncan a lot.
Yeah. And then Scarlett Johansson's name is Z.
Z, that's right. God.
That's about all I know about them. But they would like introduce them and then like a couple other people on this crew. And then they cut to this like other boat of this just like family from... They never really establish
no,
it. Like,
no, they're just sailing. They're sailing across the Atlantic. For just a family of four.
Yeah, it's like the dad says it's like their
the last hurrah.
The last hurrah before the daughter goes to college to just
yeah.
like sail through what are known to be dinosaur infested waters. And
exactly.
like very quickly they get attacked
yeah.
by a Mosasaurus and shipwrecked
uh-huh.
and have to like call for help. And the second we see them, it's like, none of these people are going to die,
uh-huh.
and they're going to join the crew. This one's comic relief,
mm-hmm.
and that's exactly how it played out. But then they cut back to, like, the ship they've already established with all these characters, and then out of
just
nowhere, we'll
characters.
Just, like, cut to,
yeah.
like, a character we've never seen who's just on the boat
yeah.
and doesn't say anything.
No.
But they just, like, have tattoos. Just like,
yeah. right. And one of those guys really made me laugh because... they introduce him in the boat. Well, they don't introduce him. You just see him in the boat. Never been introduced. Don't know anything about him. And then one of my great moments of waking up during this movie was waking up to seeing him being eaten by the, I think it's the Pterosaurus, the large flying dinosaur.
Yeah.
And it's like, he's so big that he doesn't really fit in the Pterosaurus's mouth. So it keeps like, he keeps like falling out until finally it can like whip its head back and it like gulps him down like a Tom and Jerry cartoon.
That's right. You actually see like the bulge go down its like neck.
I mean, it's just like so astounding. It just cracked me up so much.
It's kind of like I know you recently saw Shrek for the first time when the dragon eats Lord Farquaad at the end,
mm-hmm.
and he's screaming, and then it silences him, and then the dragon like whips up its mouth. And you see Farquaad, like, fly, and then his scream continues for half a second until the mouth is closed again.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, it was pretty much exactly that. Yeah, that guy, he was pretty annoying because he only spoke French the whole movie.
Oh my god, he did.
Maybe they had some subtitles, but it's just like, why do you have a character in a Jurassic Park movie who only speaks...
Omar Sy only spoke French.
Yeah, yeah. There's been like people of like French Africa before, but they like just speak English with like a French African accent. Yeah. And this guy just spoke French. So you expect anyone to like notice or care about this guy? Right. Like Mahershala Ali's like, oh, no French before 10 a.m.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that was one of my favorite lines because I guess it's supposed to sort of like commiserate with the audience's annoyance with it, maybe.
Yeah. But then, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, when they're, like, rappelling down a cliff and then going back up the cliff and, like, all of a sudden this guy's at the bottom and that flying dinosaur is, like, chasing him up the cliff and he's, like, removed from the wall, so he's just dangling there as, like, some people are holding the rope. And at that point, he starts speaking English and is just yelling, pull me up! Pull me up! And, you know, he's gonna die.
That's amazing.
Like, it keeps getting closer to him. And then it cuts to the people pulling him up, and then the dinosaur appears, and that guy's just in its mouth. Like, you don't see it.
You don't even see him.
You don't see it, like, chomp down.
Oh, my God.
It transfers from, like, them being separate to it eating
him. Just flies up with him in his mouth, basically.
Yeah, I had to, like, pause, pick, wait, so I guess that's that guy that it's eating right now. Like, the French guy's getting eaten, and then it gulped him down.
What an egregious like filmmaking error! Like,
the least like suspenseful way with like no payoff, except it was kind of funny.
You know, another very least suspenseful death moment in this movie was when the guy was eaten by the Mosasaurus off the boat, and they made a reference back to old JP1.
That's right.
That was really great. It also I don't think made physical sense because the Mosasaurus is gigantic. And it's has bitten down on his body.
Right.
There's no way that guy has the hand strength to hang on for even a split second. Yet he's like, help me.
Yeah, so this is a guy who's just kind of a jerk.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe he was Australian or something.
Oh, I think he was, yeah.
Yeah, he had some kind of, maybe South African, I'm not sure, but... Yeah, a Mosasaurus is attacking another boat. I think everyone's on the boat, and... Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, it's just eating this guy. And like Matt said, it's like a throwback to the opening scene of Jurassic Park 1. When
that professional football player was almost saved by Muldoon.
Wait, is that guy?
I think that actor was a former NFL player.
No kidding.
You think you told me that. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Or he's famous for some other reason.
Gotcha.
I thought he was a former athlete.
This is the guy.
He like, wanted to get into acting, and that was like the role he landed.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Shooter!
Yeah, this is the guy who's clinging on to the edge of the, shipping container or whatever, like, as this phantom, like, dinosaur is sucking him in.
Into the
vortex of, like, a very finite space. But it seems like being sucked into the void of like eternity, and he's like
whipsicling
off to the side.
He's like on the ground. He's instantly whipped to about 8 feet in the air.
That is such a funny scene.
Yeah, by far.
It doesn't
make
sense with a raptor. Like, just
like now we know in the movie, maybe to get right, raptors in real life were about the size of dogs,
right? Like, yeah,
golden retrievers.
But even the raptors in the movie, like when they're kind of like honing in on Grant, they're like, you know, crouched down, but they're significantly shorter than Goldblum.
And correct.
Like, this guy gets like raced up like 10 way feet high in the air and stays there. So it's not like they jumped. It's like just on the raptor tippy toes.
I love to get him up there. Boy, I mean, they're obviously pulling him into the shipping container. So why they would ever whip him up doesn't make any sense. But I love one time you had the point that like, what hand strength he must have to sort of like be able to be dragged up this metal, probably rusty container, like hold on the entire way.
Yeah, it's probably sharp, so you gotta imagine like his palms hands. Just got completely just cut and it was pretty amazing. I guess that makes sense to him being a football player.
You know what? It just dawned on me too, what Muldoon screams. He goes, "Shoot her, not shoot them." Which I think implies that there's one raptor in that. I always thought there was more than one because there's a lot of noise.
Right, right.
Unless he somehow knows that she's the one who has him. But
yeah,
I would think that he would yell shoot them if there were multiple attacking him.
Yeah, and if there were multiple loose, I think one would just run out and start eating everyone else. It's like everyone's just kind of standing there. Just like
kind of trying to poke him with a cattle prod.
Yeah.
That'll do something.
Maybe that raptor was blue.
Yeah.
One of Blue's ancestors.
Oh, yeah. Gotta be.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, this guy is getting eaten by the Mosasaurus, and like they frame it to where he like is clinging to the side of the door, where he is parallel to the ground, perpendicular to everyone standing. And he doesn't get raised, unfortunately. He's just kind of holding that for a second, and it's just like, and then gets
sucked away,
and he's dead.
You know, it's what I find with all these Jurassic World movies that I think is so funny is they're constantly like making these subtle references to the first Jurassic Park that I think only like you and me and maybe like 100 other people on Earth would understand. Like, I don't understand the point. Like, what was the point of focusing energy on making a very obscure reference?
Mm-hmm.
That was one. Another one was just early in the movie. They showed this banner being taken down in front of a dino skeleton.
It was like the exact banner that falls at the end of JP1.
I just am curious why the insistence on creating these references that truly no one will understand.
I was wondering that too. You know, the original J World, one of our first episodes, our first full movie focused episode, and you know, it's really easy to rip on and pretty bad in many ways, but like, you know, they did that a lot, but they were also kind of like calling attention to it and like had there's some reason behind the kind of meta references, like, you know, but now it's like reverted to where it's just like making these references, but like, it's not making any point with them. No. It's just like redoing these exact images.
Mm-hmm.
And it happened a lot of times, and several times while you were asleep,
because really?
I kept thinking about it. There were at least 5 parts where someone was under a car that was getting like smashed down toward them.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
I woke up a little bit during that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And like in hindsight, the crazy thing is like we're now about 10 years out from that first Jurassic World.
That's right.
You know, and like, that is now long enough in the past that it feels like, oh, they're rehashing. You know, it's like that is now almost ancient memory, you know,
right,
like for ancient history.
That's right. And it's weird too that like all these references were to like the original Jurassic Park.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's called Jurassic World, but I don't think there's any mention of like the Chris Pratt characters and like anything that happened in the 3 Jurassic World movies.
No.
And granted, there's little reference of the originals. Mm-hmm. I only remember one, other than like these images.
Yeah.
I only remember one line where like some guy was like,
Loomis. I can't believe I remember
Loomis.
His name. Dr. Loomis. Yeah. I thought because maybe there's a character Loomis in Halloween.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Loomis.
Dr. Loomis.
That's exactly
yeah.
what I was thinking. They could be relatives.
Why would they do that?
That's a notorious Dr. Loomis who's like the psychiatrist of Michael Myers.
Yeah.
He's the one guy he knows. He's just like, there's nothing redeemable about this.
Oh my God. Hey, maybe it is, Sean. Maybe it's my favorite thing on earth. 2 completely unrelated movie franchises merging into one.
I mean, I
Michael
feel like,
Myers versus T-Rex.
T-Rex.
You know how great that would be?
Yeah, this T-Rex, Michael Myers just walking up slowly to it with his like William Shatner mask and his knife at the ready.
They have to, the only way the dinosaurs have like reinvaded the United States, and the only they need to like, you know, in a very like whenever those movie franchises come together, one of the bad guys ends up being a good guy. So whether it's Freddy versus Jason or Alien versus Predator or something like
that. One of them is the one you root for.
Exactly. You end up rooting for Michael Myers to kill the dinosaurs.
We'll take the person who's like no emotions and is a complete psychopath over this just reptilian beast.
Oh my God, I'd love that. Can you imagine? Michael Myers, like, he's a very strong guy. Like, we see him lift up 200-pound men holding a knife with one hand.
Right.
That's something he does sometimes.
Yeah.
God, I just have an image of him, like, almost like Mario grabbing Bowser, just, like, grabbing a T-Rex's tail and, like, spinning around.
Just launching it far into the distance.
Yeah, yeah.
Sneaking up on a wall to sleep.
That would be so funny.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Oh my God. That would be great.
Yeah. But, oh, yeah. Just Dr. Loomis. Yeah. Loomis makes some passing reference.
Oh, yeah.
Some
he did his postdoc work under Alan Grant.
Yeah, it was such like a just kind of random line. Yeah. Like they're just walking through some cave or whatever, and I don't know what the hell they're talking about. And he's like, oh, I did postdoc work under Alan Grant.
Yeah.
And they don't dwell on it. They just talk about something else the next line.
Like, just like, again, just like a lot of like, kind of in my mind, this movie had a lot of non sequiturs. Like they literally just like, almost the way South Park used to show the manatees writing the Family Guy episodes.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like, pick a line. All right, work this one in. I don't care how. Just do it.
Pick an image from Jurassic World or Jurassic Park 1 and we'll find a way to get it in there. Because there were also like, at least three of those fences that, you know, are like electrified in the original that Dr. Grant does his like, I'm getting electrocuted joke. And there were several of those that they had to like cut with wire clippers. Yeah. But like, yeah, they wouldn't like stop on them and be like, then like do the same thing. It would just like, it was almost like they tried to frame it the same way to just like remind your like subconscious, like this is something that you like and you're familiar with. And then the best was you were asleep for it, but I laughed so hard that you woke up and immediately started laughing and knew why towards the end when, so it does come around to, I think, this D-Rex, which like is by far the weirdest looking dinosaur I've ever seen. It literally looks like the alien from Alien crossed with the T-Rex.
Okay.
It had like this elephant man like bulge on the top of its head.
I woke up 1 second to see it.
Yeah.
I didn't see it other than that.
It's just like dripping fangs.
Wow.
And that's the one that grabbed the guy at the beginning, I think. But it's like, you know, chasing after everyone. And then Green Book all of a sudden has a flare like that Goldblum has at the beginning and lights it. And he's like, go, go! Literally,
oh
like, he might say the exact same thing that Jeff Goldblum does when he starts distracting the T-Rex and running away. And that's when Scarlett Johansson starts screaming Duncan because he leads it away. And
okay, so yeah, I woke up to that laughter. And that's when I heard Duncan. Yeah, I was waiting for when the family was in the boat, in the yellow boat, and the T-Rex was, like Michael Myers, walking after them.
Right.
Just slowly lumbering after them.
Yeah.
I was waiting for them to go, must go faster. I was really bummed that they didn't.
That's true. Yeah. 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 Yeah, that was a missed opportunity.
You know, so something that my favorite thing about this movie is the fact that me personally, in terms of like the viewing experience, is the fact that my viewing experience of this movie, I wasn't expecting this to happen, but it almost exactly mirrored my Indiana Jones viewing experience.
Right.
And that was Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny?
Yeah, yeah. That's
wow.
It. You got
wow.
It.
Because I kept falling asleep. I didn't realize until we're talking about it right now how much I did fall asleep. I thought I like dozed off like two or three times. But yeah, just like Indiana Jones.
About two-thirds of the movie.
Exactly. Because like at one point there's these like other flying dinosaurs that had very strange faces.
Right.
Like turtle faces almost.
Yeah, that's right.
And yeah, just kept these like very, very strange moments. and just like missing so much of it, I guess.
Yeah.
Pretty hilarious.
I remember with the Dial of Destiny, you'd wake up and catch like a line and things had just like developed Yeah, like, some kind of absurd level that just make no sense of what happens in between.
Yeah, they were underwater. I didn't know that Antonio Banderas was in the movie until we were recording. I had no idea.
You just missed Antonio Banderas completely.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did just kind of appear and then wasn't in that long.
Yeah, because he died, right? Character.
I think so. I think he might have double-crossed or something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Pulled a Mac.
Oh, from the previous Indiana
Jones.
From the previous Indiana Jones.
Jonesy. And Game of the Crystal Skull, which... Mac. You texted me recently about Mac.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I don't know why. I was thinking about, what is his name? The actor.
Ray Winstone. Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking about him. Yeah, Mac made me laugh because he kept calling him Jonesy.
Yeah, you and I were talking yesterday about how we like when, like, that trope where a character, you get to know one character, then another character comes in and they just imply a backstory through, like... Like something that happened, like, oh, yeah, I remember Venezuela. Like,
exactly.
Like, oh, they go way back and they have, like, maybe a way of shaking each other's hands or, like, whatever. But it was very strange to do that in the fourth Indiana Jones movie with a character that has never been in it or mentioned. And it's all of a sudden, like, Indiana Jones's best friend.
Yeah.
Just like, who the hell is this guy? Like, he's not Indiana Jones's best friend.
Yeah, yeah.
But we're supposed to just, like, believe he's, like, goes way back and then double-crosses him, like, 30 minutes into the movie. Yeah. And you're like, oh, I can't believe Mac would double-cross him.
And then, like, you know, and then Indiana Jones is, like, in being interrogated by the FBI or whatever. He's like, you know, Mac, you know, we were together in Berlin. just added that alone always kind of made me laugh, but also confused me a bit. Cause, like, I always felt Indiana Jones's world was, like, somewhat limited, but then Kingdom of the Crystal Skull implied that, like, Indiana Jones was, like, such a valuable, basically, like, intelligence asset because of his knowledge of the world during World War II, that he was, like, undercover in German-speaking Berlin because he'd been there before and he'd met Hitler before.
He's the Ark of the Covenant guy.
Yeah, he knows Nazis in and out. He's fluent German and ancient Greek. And...
Yeah, if one of them wants a bare-knuckle brawl, he'll get them caught in a plane propeller in no time.
You know, real quick, I have to make this point because... You know, listeners, something Sean and I were talking about the other day is how sometimes you'll revisit a scene from a movie that you maybe haven't seen in a long time, and something about it just clicks in a new way and is just utterly hilarious. One for me that we shared a little bit about was Napoleon Dynamite. But another one for me that just the other day, I caught it on TV and I could not stop laughing. It was that famous scene in Last Crusade when the Nazis learn that Marcus Brody has the diary. Yeah. And they're like, that'll be easy. Get Brody. Like, go get him. And Indiana Jones is like, to hell you will. You know, he has friends from here to the Sudan. And, you know, he speaks a dozen languages, knows every culture. He'll blend in. He's invisible. And then it cuts to Brody and he's wearing like a bright white suit. And he clearly sticks out like a sore thumb. He goes, does anybody here speak English or perhaps ancient Greek? That line I never really caught that. But that line made me laugh so hard.
That's
he
good.
Is like such a stick in the mud, like intellectual.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't know any local language, but he could fluently speak ancient Greek to you.
You know English or ancient Greek. That is great. Yeah, that's a great joke.
It is so funny.
The third Indiana Jones is essentially a comedy. Like, right, you know, the first one's really funny, but like, you know, it kind of like will like sprinkle in the humor. The second one is only funny to very dark-minded individuals like me and stuff. And then the third one, they're just like, let's just make this a kind of slapstick comedy and throw in some Holy Grail stuff.
You know, Spielberg has this way of just inserting comedy into a scene that otherwise maybe isn't inherently comedic. But by doing it in a very, what I would say, Spielbergian way, which is just... taking a moment to focus on someone's face. And so like he'll do that in such a clever way. Like when Indiana Jones in Last Crusade is on the motorcycle, being chased by Nazis, and he shoves the flagpole into the guy's wheel, which causes the bike to like explode, like in the second before that guy blows up in the air. Just a quick close up on his face. He's like, oh. And it's like, you easily didn't have to do that, but somehow doing that like quickly grounds the scene and just makes it funny.
That's
like,
right. Yeah.
It just gives you as the audience a little bit of an indication of like how you're allowed to feel about this scene. Like,
right.
It's okay to be lighthearted with this.
And yeah, there's something brilliant about it too, because it's like, it's maybe 1 second of screen time, mm-hmm. and it's way better than if that's just some anonymous person whose face you never saw, who's getting like flung through the air. Mm-hmm. Like all of a sudden it's this guy with this face. Exactly. Just makes it like more hilarious.
Yeah. Like, oh, and he also does it dramatically in a great way. I mean, the famous Roy Snyder, is it Snyder or Schneider from Jaws?
Oh, it's Scheider.
Scheider.
Yeah.
I was wrong. Shiter. One of these shites. Chief, but that famous dolly zoom of Roy Scheider's face when when he sees the shark. So good.
The shark eating that kid.
God, I fucking love him. I love
Robert Shaw.
Yep.
Quint.
Quint.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah, me too. He's entered my top five characters of all time. He could be taking the crown these days. He's one of those characters that just, I don't know, something about the older you get, the more you love him.
Yeah.
He's such a psycho.
Oh my God.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's a classic.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we never really described the plot, but
we didn't.
I would imagine our one listener picked it up because it's,
yeah,
I think it's pretty much what we said, that they're just trying to get samples from these dinosaurs.
Yeah.
To like, and there's like the bad guy, you know, who's like organizing this whole thing, and he works for the pharmaceutical companies, and they're like, oh, they're going to make it. It's something that could save the whole world, but they're going to make it so only 1% of people can get it. Mm. And then like, I think Dr. Loomis is kind of like got a thing with Scarlett Johansson off to the side. And he's like, if we could get this, like, if we could get this, we could get it to everyone.
That's
but you wouldn't get a $10 million paycheck.
Oh, yeah.
She's like, oh, I don't like that. And then, of course, it ends with, like, that guy, the big asshole guy, being the last guy to get eaten.
Okay, I missed that.
Yeah, so he also,
you call
like,
him the baby asshole?
Not intentionally, but
if you called him like a baby, and it's like an asshole, you called him the baby asshole guy.
He's just a big baby. So he's like
a white suit.
White suit.
Throwback to Gennaro, Donald Gennaro, the lawyer. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
But he was wearing pants, not shorts.
And he also abandons a child.
Does he?
As like, yeah. So this kid from that family that, you know, ends up joining is like about to go overboard.
Oh, that's right.
And she's like,
just looks at her,
staring at him because he's right there, and she's like, save me. And he just stares at her until she falls off.
Yeah.
Of course, she survives, and then her whole character is just like, I'm going to kill that guy.
I'm going to get that guy.
Yeah, he's a bad guy. It's like after her like lazy boyfriend had called him creepy. So like, you know, it's the same thing where it's like everyone in this movie doesn't like this guy.
Therefore
he's a bad guy. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he's the big money guy, and so like at the end when this D-Rex is going rogue, he and Scarlett Johansson are like hiding under the same car that's getting like smashed down, and then he just bails, gets in the car, and drives away. So she's just like lying
there?
On the like asphalt, and has to like run into the bushes to get away from this dinosaur. And as he's like driving away, there's a lot of references to Nedry. To
no
Newman.
Way.
Yeah, it's like a similar kind of like,
did they
he like goes
squeak?
Off-road.
He slipped.
They might have, you know, I could have missed it. But there's actually a sign that he passes, and it says dock with an arrow.
No way.
Yeah, so he's trying to get to the dock.
My God.
Goes off-road and basically somehow ends up back around where everyone is, and the dinosaur just like picks him out of his Jeep thing and just like starts He's like the one they show most explicitly. Oh, it like bites off his head and then just like eating the rest of him. And then his like his little bag of the three vials just falls right at the feet of one of these characters, and they just grab
they
it.
Get it.
And then, you know,
missed all that.
At the end, Loomis is like, so do we make the big money, or should we give this to everyone? And just goes to Scarlett Johansson. She's like, we'll give it to everyone.
Wow.
Like, wow, I didn't see that coming. Like, oh man, giving up that $10 million paycheck.
This movie was another example of me where it's like, I get it. In screenwriting, it's not necessarily a sign of quality when a script actually mirrors the way people talk in real life. Like, right, really great writers have kind of their own cadence that they develop. But somewhere along the way, you have to wonder whether the people who wrote the script have ever actually heard people speak to each other. Because, like, the scenes in the beginning when Scarlett Johansson is, like, enlisted for this, because she is, it's implied that she's the best.
Yes.
Because, you know, her background is implied to whatever. Like, it's the most, like, AI, what would a spy what would like a what would sort of a covert conversation stereotypically sound like?
Right.
You know, because I thought about that when you mentioned the money, because I think it's how much is she going to get? $10 million, right? Something like that.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. He describes it as, she's like, how much are we talking? It's like early. Yeah. He goes, 10 plus six zeros.
Right.
Why not just say 10 million?
Yeah, and then like she actually asks him, like, does that include the first zero of the 10? Six just four. And he's like, no. So they have a full exchange around that completely pointless way of presenting this. You will make $10 million.
Like, that's confusing. I'll be honest. Like,
yeah,
I'm not the best with numbers on earth, but like, you know, I'm an educated person, and I had to like stop and try and remember, like, what number has six zeros?
Me too. It's like, is that 10 million or is that 1 million or 10 billion?
It's just like, and to me, like, lends to the question of like, who was this movie made for? Because again, you and I have seen Jurassic Park a million times, but you do have to remember that that movie came out 32 years ago. And so like, there's a generation of people that this movie's tailored toward who weren't even alive when the first one came out. So what's the point? Like, why not just take all this effort to make this movie, take half the money that was made to this movie and just devote it to create a new franchise?
Yeah.
Why this?
Yeah. Yeah. It's baffling. And this is the first, I mean, you know, Jurassic World was a big hit, the first one.
It was.
Like, everyone was talking about it. I saw it.
Mm-hmm.
Then the second one came out, Fallen Kingdom, that you and I saw together, but you
completely forgot that we saw that together.
And I've barely heard people talk about that. And then the next one, you heard some people talk about, it's like, oh, Goldblum and Grant Dern are back and stuff. And like, you know, it was like making some money and bringing like them all together. Uh-huh. And this came out, and I have literally never met anyone who's seen it. And I've asked people, like, and when it came out, I'd ask everyone I know, like, hey, did you see the new Jurassic Park movie? And they'd be like, there's a new Jurassic Park movie? Like, no one even knew it was there.
No.
But they're still reporting it, like, made money. It's like, who the hell saw this? Like, I know a diverse amount of people and diverse groups.
I have no
one
even
had heard of this. Like, no one knows this movie exists.
I didn't know that it was coming out until about a month before it came out.
Yeah.
Which is like, wow, for a summer blockbuster, that's a crazy thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, before we kind of wrap, one thing I would ask is, of all the Jurassic Park and Jurassic World movies in existence, I know you only kind of caught little bits here and there of this.
Mm-hmm.
It was probably like 40 minutes in when you started to doze off.
Yeah.
The first act was like entertaining and how bad it was. And then once the dinosaurs showed up, it was unbelievably boring. Like,
I picked up on that when I would wake up.
Yeah.
I just was like, what's happening? You expect to wake up to action and it was nothing.
Yeah.
It's like slow moving.
Yeah.
Every scene was so much longer than it had to be.
Yeah. I mean, I was
really
struggling not to doze off for a lot of it. I was just sitting there like, I can't believe how boring.
Yeah.
This movie is like, even the deaths aren't that fun. There's like not that many of them.
In a Jurassic Park movie.
Yeah, exactly. But of all the ones in existence, was there one that it maybe reminded you of the most? Because there's a clear one for me.
Oh, okay. I mean, on the one that I keep going back to, okay, so I will say there is an element of it that reminds me of, to a degree, Lost World, because they need to go to an island and they need to extract something, but, you know, right, there's a team of people. But I don't really know why. For me, it was 3. Same. Jurassic Park 3. I can't really explain why. Maybe the Spinosaurus. I've always loved Spinosaurus because of Jurassic Park 3. As you know, Jurassic Park 3 holds a special place in my heart because I saw it how many times total in theater?
Twice in the same day.
Yeah. 3 times total, twice in the same day. There's no way there's another human being on Earth that did that.
Yeah.
Maybe twice in the same day, but there's no way. I have to be the only person on Earth who saw it twice in the same day and then another time. I'm very proud of myself.
Yeah, yeah. It's a good badge of honor.
But what reminded you of 3? There was no Tay Leone, no reference to, what was Macy's company? Kirby Enterprises.
Kirby.
Mr. Kirby. Mr. Kirby. Alan.
They had some weird names in these movies. It was great. Like reference to Dr. Loomis and now reference to Kirby.
Kirby.
It's like Pink Puffball that William H. Macy's character is named after.
Why didn't they make more? They should have made, you know, they're always making these references to Jurassic Park 1. Make more to Jurassic Park 3.
Yeah.
You know?
I felt like this was, I don't know if it was a conscious thing or if it just kind of happened, but they seemed to, it mirrored a lot of JP3.
I've really felt that. I don't know why, though.
Because, like, yeah, there's someone in JP3, they, like, are recruiting Grant to go back to this place. You know, that's like a rescue mission, but he's super reluctant to go, and they probably convince him with money or something.
That is, well, yeah.
That's
that
basically
is
what happens with Scarlett Johansson. You're right. You know? She's like, oh, I don't want to go. And they have that 10 and 6-0 conversation, and she's like, all right, I'll go.
In Jurassic Park 3, sorry, real quick, once Grant realizes what's going on, he goes to Mr. Kirby. He goes, so I suppose some of those zeros on the check aren't going to be valid or something.
Really?
Or something about that, the number on the check. But I think he said something like, so I suppose I should take several of those zeros off that check you gave me. And then that's when H. Macy begins to say, no, but if you, well, yes, yeah, sorry, blah, blah, blah. But if you find yourself in Tulsa, I think it was Tulsa, like, come by Kirby Bath and Tile Works. I think that was the name of Mr. Kirby's store. He owned like a bathroom remodeling store. It
he was
wasn't
just a con man.
He was a con man. He tried to make him see. He's like a Jerry Lundegaard.
He's a Jerry Lundegaard. Just conned this guy into like going to his almost certain death, completely lying to him.
Oh, made himself out to be some like industrialist with like his glasses and his suit. Kirby Enterprises.
Yeah, yeah.
No, he just owns a bathroom store.
Just some no-name guy. Yeah, I would never forgive that guy. It's a horrible thing to do.
I know. Yeah, it is.
Even if you're trying to save your kid or whatever.
And it actually does result in the death of several people.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But not the people we care about. Which is
right. Not, what's the kind of young guy's name who's always stealing those eggs?
Oh, yeah.
Is it Benny?
It's not Benny, but it's...
something like that.
It's that kind of name.
That kind
of... what is it?
The underling.
It's not Timmy. It's not Stevie or something.
Yeah.
Billy.
Billy.
It's Billy.
Billy. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Billy.
But it's like they're just in this kind of, I mean, they start on a boat for a while, but then they're like just navigating this jungle. And it was just like the way. It seems like all the other Jurassic Parks have characters in different settings and they're kind of like jumping between them or something. Mm-hmm. And like, there's kind of the multiple arcs of like the kids and Grant and like, like
that's a good point.
Goldblum and Dern and stuff and Newman and whatnot. But then Jurassic Park 3 is just like, here's these very finite group of characters who are navigating this like
it could almost be a stage
together.
Play.
Yeah.
One location bottle episode play.
Yeah, they're just surrounded by jungle and like dinosaurs appear.
Yeah.
And there's eggs at some point. Mm-hmm. Like they find a nest of eggs in this one to like extract from them.
Oh, okay.
That's when they first get attacked by the flying dinosaur. Flying dinosaurs in general, but
you're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah. And then like there's like this briefcase that has these like important mm-hmm. samples. And yeah, just the way it was filmed felt very JP3 and not in a good way.
And you know, you're right. And another thing is JP3 involves the people being stuck on the island because of some kind of like a crash, which it was a boat crash in this one. Yeah. And the plane crashed when they were trying to take off. You're right. It's like they're stuck there and they need to survive. Whereas like the other ones, they need to survive, but they kind of like willingly went there, you know?
Yeah.
Or like more willingly, whatever.
And there's a theme park that like went wrong or something. Mm-hmm. And like, this is just like this domain of like abandoned.
Yep. Yep.
Like there's barely any signs of human contact with this place. There's like one small kind of like lab or something. Mm-hmm. And basically, apparently it's a place where like, I guess it's the place at the beginning where like these like genetic modifications are being mm-hmm. done to create new dinosaurs, and like, you know, the big corporate guys like yeah, and so if that didn't work out for the theme park, we mm-hmm. just let them roam here. And they're like, well, why didn't you just kill them? He's like, oh, you don't just kill a $70 million investment. Like, okay, so you just let it roam through this like untouched jungle. Like, how does that make any sense? But yeah, so they just end up there mm-hmm. and are trying to get out as quick as they get in.
Yeah, these movies, they really expand. I now no longer know how many like dinosaur original lab locations there were, because
it was pretty clear at the beginning.
At the like, beginning,
three places or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Like, because Jurassic Park takes place on one, Lost World takes place on the other one,
yeah.
And then Jurassic Park 3 takes place on the other one. So according to those three movies, there are two locations. One was like the original breeding location. One was the park. And the 2 and 3 take place on like the breeding location that have dinosaurs. But then like by the time Jurassic World, I have no idea what island that's supposed to be on.
Right, yeah.
And then they keep alluding. And then this movie, they seem to go everywhere.
Yeah, and they're just part of human civilization, but that's only focused on for about 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
It's just like some brachiosaurus like lounging by some like road in LA or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. With like trees on its back.
Yeah.
It was, did I miss that or was that
no,
was
it
that
was real? Just like covered in foliage.
What was the point of that?
I don't know.
I was so confused.
Yeah.
Like, it goes to show you how little expectations I had for this movie that I didn't even try and figure out why.
Yeah.
I just ignored it.
So did the characters.
They did.
Just like, let's show this, but then we're going to talk about this distant place and this like mission we need to do that's like nefarious because this like creepy guy's involved in a white suit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, kind of rounding this one out? Or
more? Do you think there are more coming out?
Probably.
They show no sign of stopping. You know, like they don't need the same characters, obviously. Completely new characters.
Yeah, this one's the most just like divorced from any like
correct
storyline of the past.
I'm still surprised that they didn't, after the last Jurassic World, I'm really surprised that they, I think you and I had thought that maybe they were going to make like a mini series.
Yeah.
You know,
I think there had been some talk about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they had a character in that.
The girl, the pilot.
Yeah. Who they were clearly setting up as like
a new protagonist. Like,
okay, here's the OG generation. Yep. Mm-hmm. Here's, you know, this Pratt mm-hmm. generation. And then here's
the next one.
She's going to bring it forward. And
nothing happened with that.
Nothing happened with that. She's just gone.
So they just brought back Scarlett Johansson and literally a whole horde of actors. Well, Mahershala Ali, people know about. But aside from that, like, I don't mean this in a negative way, but a bunch of nobodies. Like, I have no idea who any of these people were.
If it did feel like the dad on the boat with the family, like, they couldn't get Pedro Pascal, so they just got this guy.
You're right.
Oh, man, there's such a bad subplot with that where, like, so it's like this dad, I guess, maybe just generally Latin American family or something. Yeah. And there's two daughters, one's like teenage and one's just like super young. Also.
Oh, I'm so excited to hear what just came to your mind.
I think you might have missed all of this.
Oh, damn it.
But at some point they're on the island or wherever they are and they turn around and it looks like essentially a mini Triceratops. And by mini, okay. I mean like, you know, like
the size of
like,
a pug.
Like a size of a dachshund. Yeah. Yeah, or a pug. Mm-hmm. Just kind of like comes up to him and is like making these noises. And like someone starts kicking at it. Like, get away, get away. But like this little girl is like, no, he's okay. And like, then this thing keeps showing up and she befriends it. No. And like takes it as a pet and starts carrying it around in her backpack.
Oh my god. And then god.
Every few scenes, it would just poke its head out and like look around. I was just waiting for like, all right, what way are they going to make this like little yeah. Triceratops thing consequential? And they just didn't.
They didn't.
It was just her pet and I think maybe she brought it home or something.
Oh my god. Okay, yeah. So I did miss all of that. I saw it one time. I think right when they first meet it.
Yeah.
And then I kept waking up and I remember like seeing something strange about her back. And I think in my twilight, like a falling asleep, I kept thinking like, what's on her head? Like I couldn't quite like figure out what's going on.
It's like growth coming out of her back. It's yeah. got infected by yeah. some dinosaur spored mushroom.
Yeah. It was just so, that was so entertaining. I have to say for movies like this that already don't have a lot of through line. Like to fall asleep during them and then to just wake up and the scenes seeming as though they came from an unrelated movie. Like, yeah. like it's very entertaining.
Totally.
With Indiana Jones and with this too.
Yep. Yep. But yeah, it was just like some just stupid subplot where like this teenager daughter, the fourth character in this group is like her boyfriend.
Yeah.
And like, it introduces him by, like, they're on their boat, and the dad's like, oh, when's he going to get up? He's supposed to take the wheel right now. And he, like, lazily gets up, and he's like, hey, are you going to take the wheel? And the kid's like, oh, I'm too tired. Like, can you just keep the wheel? And, like, that just, like, goes back to sleep.
Yeah.
And so, like, the dad's like, I don't approve of this lazy boyfriend. Yeah. And the daughter's just like, you don't know him yet. And then, like, he proves himself in all these other ways. And yeah. then like, there's a couple scenes around a fire where like the two daughters are asleep and like this like teenager's making the fire and the dad's like trying to have a moment like, hey, I saw the way you jumped in the water after my daughter. And then like, they're like trying to make these sentimental yeah. bonding moments with the teenagers like super like deeply self-hating. He's like, oh yeah. Yeah. And like the dad's like, oh, she like sees the real you, I guess. And he's like, the kid is just like, let's hope she doesn't, and just walks away to go take a piss. And, like, and the dad's like, don't say that, then you're taking like what they say about us to heart.
What they say about us. Wow.
So just like offshoot scenes where they're just like trying to make this like emotional chronology and then they're like best friends yeah. by the end, you know?
It's like make a really quick reference to like cultural bigotry.
Exactly, yeah.
And then just move on.
And have that be no part of the movie. Like exactly. No one holds this perspective towards the characters in the movie except maybe the guy that let the daughter
yeah.
die, but
yeah.
don't really know why he did that.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Or she didn't actually die, but he seemed... Because no. yeah.
the boyfriend jumped in and saved her.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he went after her. Yeah.
So amazing.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, what a bad movie.
What a bad movie.
Yeah.
I really can't wait to read some reviews about it now.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm curious.
I imagine they're all bad.
Yeah.
I can't imagine anyone giving this a good review. Like,
me neither.
Yeah.
I don't even feel like the movie warrants enough passion to really, like... give like a fun scathing critique, you know.
Yeah.
Scathing critiques usually come from a sense of passion, but
yeah,
but this maybe movie
something in
yeah
here.
This doesn't really evoke enough to I'm curious to see what the critiques are like.
Yeah,
yeah, because when Ebert said what a bad movie, he really that was Tommy Boy, wasn't it?
That's right. I just kept trying to remember what it was.
he really got impassioned. What a bad movie.
What a bad movie. Yep. This is a movie that made no one feel impassioned,
no.
including any of the actors who are in it, who give some of the most just stale and boring performances I've ever seen.
Wow. No kidding.
Yeah. Incredibly forgettable.
Yeah.
And yet, I feel like I'll still remember it maybe a little more than Fallen Kingdom.
Me too.
Somehow.
I can't believe. Yeah. I don't have a memory of Fallen Kingdom, I have a memory of realizing that I saw it.
Yeah.
Like, that's my memory of that film.
Realizing you saw it and had no memory of it.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's except maybe Cromwell.
Yeah, Cromwell, which again, any specific thing I really only remember because I caught some of it on TV and then I re-listened to our episode. Like, again, I can't believe it.
Yeah.
Forgot we saw that movie together.
And everyone forgot it, which was a real fun thing to snob about for the Jurassic World Dominion.
Yeah.
How every Jurassic Park movie up until that point had like an opening scene where it just like something bad happens.
That's right.
But the opening scene for Jurassic World Dominion was like 5 minutes of exposition of what happened in Fallen Kingdom.
To remind everyone,
In Dominion, because they just knew, like, well,
no one's going to remember.
No one knows, and we're actually building on what happened in that movie. So we had to abandon this trope and just, like, give a basically, like, the thing they do in shows who are, like, previously on Jurassic Park.
You're right. The amazing thing is they had to build it up. They had to have you remember because they planned on undercutting the entire plot of the previous one.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
She's not a clone. You were her daughter.
The thing that was the big surprise ending of the last movie is actually not true. That's the new surprise. Oh.
It's like,
who writes these movies? Like, how are these people so, like,
I have Hollywood's no
highest paid screenwriters? It's so dumb.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it could be children.
I can't believe that. I can't believe that was approved.
Yeah.
You could fix that. You could fix it without literally saying what happened last time didn't happen. You know, it's like people point to, there's this like weird season of Roseanne where like John Goodman's character dies.
Okay.
And it's like, what's going on? And then it like turns out Roseanne was having a dream. I think he's like dead the whole season. And then they're like, this show isn't working without John Goodman. So then at the end, it's like Roseanne wakes up from a dream.
Oh, my God.
I mean, it's akin to that.
Yeah.
I know. I could be. I'm not getting the details right about Roseanne, but it is like a dream. So just like that's not permitted to solve the questions that are lingering.
Right. Yeah.
You're not allowed to wake up from a dream.
It's the dumbest, like, possible excuse. Unbelievably unsatisfying. The opposite of sticking the landing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Well, it's good to snob again with you, listener.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure you haven't seen this movie and probably never will.
But probably not.
Hopefully you enjoyed hearing some snobs about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you for coming along for the ride. And we look forward to the next Jurassic World, I guess.
See you in a few years.
Exactly. All right. Well, thank you all.
Really well.
Bye. Thanks, Avard.
Off to you, Avard.